Hi there, kids. It's me, Mr. Creepypasta. Dracula, Frankenstein, the Wolfman, the Mummy, and the Creature from the Black Lagoon are some of the most well-known monsters in horror history. Universal monsters, as they're known to be. Recently, there's been new films that kind of bring them to light. However, I don't think any of them have really done the monsters justice. Tonight, I bring you kids a tale of those universal monsters, retold in a creepypasta format. Frankenstein meets the Ice Vampire. It was Christmas Eve, and the town of Viseria was as dark as a coffin hole. The town and much of the surrounding area had been caught in the middle of a foul storm that had risen up from seemingly nowhere nearly 2 weeks previously to bury cars, block roads, and snuff out the light of the street lamps, which had already proven to merge to stave off the deep winter darkness. On this night, there was only one person who was out beyond the warm confines of a house. Her name was Maria Vasilev, and she wore neither boots nor gloves. A rime of frost covered the snowy ground, waiting to shatter into razor shards with every step. The cold lay heavily on her lungs, threatening to smother her with every breath she took. But she kept moving. She had to, for her family's sake. And she had to move quickly, too, for the storm had brought something far deadlier than the cold. She'd been the one who'd found the first body, lying naked in the middle of the snow-covered road that led directly into Main Street, as white as eggshells and so thin and twisted that she'd look like a heap of wind-tossed bracken until she'd gotten closer. It was Miss Kerr, a woman who lived in a small shack near the town's entrance. She'd been reclusive. Apparently, she had not only lost her son the year before during a logging accident, but she was also mentally ill. The coroner had ruled it as an accident, brought on by hallucination or some kind of episode. It was bullshit, of course. That, and as she herself had asked him, once the shock had lessened, what kind of accident drains a person of fluid without spilling a drop on the ground and leaves them riddled with tiny puncture wounds? Those same questions had plagued her as the bodies had begun to pile up as the snow rose to cover windows and block doors. And while she'd seen the patterns in the killings and disappearances, the near impossible truth had become evident to her. Now she marched onward, with the wind tugging at her clothes like an anxious child, and whispering in her ear like a chorus of phantoms. Each passing minute made her muscles tense a little more. She was waiting, dreading the moment when the wind's wordless hiss would fade, and she'd hear the voice of the thing that had turned her town into its hunting ground. Her hand strayed to her neck at the thought. The golden cross, a gift from her grandfather, felt heavy and faintly warm on its chain. It galvanized her, and she picked up the pace. Her numb feet took her down a thin, winding street that led her out of town and between the hills to the radio tower and the cottage that lay in its shadow. It was the occupant of that cottage who she had business with. He was an old friend of hers, and was, as she suspected, the only one who could help her. His name was Boris, and he wasn't a human in the least. Of this, the entire town, Maria included, was in agreement. Maria was young, but not even the eldest of the town's denizens could remember a time when Boris and his cottage had not been there. Some claim to have seen documents dating back to the town's formation in 1793 that detailed the arrival of a tall, deformed man who had constructed a large cottage beyond the borders using trees that he had uprooted with his bare hands. Others claim that he'd been there before the town was even built, citing stories told by their ancestors, passed down as ghost stories, local flavor, and told of a freakish monster, neither living nor dead, that came into the town during the coldest months in the darkest years in search of human prey. Maria, unsure of either story, had asked her father, a councilman, about it once, and he had at length told her that he wasn't sure about either story, and that he had never seen any of these supposed illuminating documents. "It doesn't matter, though," he continued, cutting her off before she could press him further. "I've seen him talked to him. The man, if he can be called that, is not human. I've seen him go into the woods without a gun or knife, and return carrying a dead deer or bear. I've seen him frighten away some scientist type who are trespassing near his cottage by lifting his car off the ground and holding it up over his head. And sometimes, when the thunder showers come in summer, I see him at the top of the radio tower, holding his hands up to catch the lightning. He had told her tales besides those, including that of his supposed violent, occultic origin. He had clearly hoped to warn her off any attempts to make contact with him, should she see him. But at that age, nothing had scared her. She stayed in the graveyard through midnight, and eagerly devoured every bit of macabre literature in the town, inundating herself with the weird and eerie until she could make the toughest boys in her class cringe with her descriptions of ghastly monsters and evil locales. So when she'd seen the tall, dark figure lumbering into town one Saturday in March, she'd been far too curious to resist going up to him. "Hi," she said, sticking her tiny hand out. "I'm Maria." In retrospect, the stunned and horrified looks of a few people who had stayed on the street, coupled with the way that Boris had tensed up when she'd walked into his path, should have told her that she'd broken a major unspoken rule, but again, she hadn't noticed. She'd always imagined that he'd look far worse than he did. All the stories, and the hushed, fearful voices that had carried them, had made her imagine something rotting and foul-smelling, with maggot-ridden pits for eyes and anglerfish teeth, a walking quilt of desiccated skin possessed by something evil. As such, when she'd finally seen him, she had been surprised at just how far off the mark she'd been. Despite his inhuman nature being on prominent display, he was far more human-like in his overall appearance. Beneath a mane of inky black hair, his skin was stretched taut across his skull and was colored a light bluish gray that made the scars and sutures that cut through it look vivid, and the bright yellow eyes that stared back at her all the more striking. For a moment, it seemed like the entire town had witnessed her boldness and was holding its breath. Then Boris's thin, black lips parted, revealing metal teeth as he answered in a deep, haunting voice.
"Hello?"
From there, Maria had proceeded to bombard him with questions, some banal and some that proved insensitive with perspective. He'd answered as many as he cared to, though he looked away often as he did, clearly worried over the possible repercussions of what he was doing. Eventually, her mother and father had come and taken her away, grounding her for months as punishment and keeping her well within the sight for some time after. They couldn't watch her forever. Eventually, she met Boris again. And again, and again. It wasn't a romantic interest she took in him. It was a deep feeling of kinship. She felt pulled to him, and the world which he represented. All the possibilities his very existence opened up. Of course, there was more to it than that. To her, Boris was a fellow misfit. Someone who was as interested in the morbid and strange as she was. Someone who'd listen to the new terrors that she'd cooked up, and would share his own. She loved her other friends and family, but Boris was someone who she could truly feel comfortable around. Her parents had even relaxed around him after they'd come to realize that their daughter was in safe hands. Maria often thought that they were secretly grateful to have someone to watch her, even though at 18 she was perfectly capable of looking after herself. It freed them up to cater to their second daughter, Maria's little sister, Sophia. Sophia. The memories of her pudgy, smiling face. The way her parents had looked at her the day they'd brought her home from the hospital. Her wobbling first steps, where she toddled right up to her big sister with a big, gummy smile. It brought her a brief flash of happiness to a stomach-clenching end. She tightened her hand around the cross and prayed that she could get to Boris's in time. He was the only one who could help her. It made sense, after all, that monsters should believe in monsters. There was something in the air that unnerved Boris. He had felt it early in the day, the silence that had slipped through the layered mumbling of his four televisions, the loud chatter of his radio, and the soft hiss of the white noise machine that he kept beside his bed. Now he stood just outside his cottage, his door open to let the light out as he stared down at the town that he'd watched over since before the first building had been painted. He watched, and felt his worry grow. All was dark and still. He couldn't see a single Christmas light, even with his extra-normal vision. And the streets were desolate. Boris frowned. He'd never celebrated Christmas before, having only ever seen its traditions played out on TV, or in his early years after the fall of his father's castle, through windows obscured by frost, and his interest in the whole affair was rapidly piqued, even when he lived so close to a town which celebrated it with as much vigor as it did. But he knew that Christmas Eve was a time for parties and frenzied last-minute shopping, at least as far as his town was considered. But he couldn't hear anything. No cars running. No drunken shouting, no carolers singing, no dogs barking, nothing but the silence that perturbed him so much. He shivered, even though he could barely feel the cold, and thought back to the days before his birth. When he'd run from his father's estate through a haze of pain, he'd only stopped when the crowding sensation grew too intense. He'd been lucky to find the cemetery as out of the way as it was. In between bouts of bone-grinding seizures and agonizing muscle cramps, when he wished he could tear open the sutures to relieve the burning and itching below his skin, he'd stay prone upon the hard earth and try to keep himself distracted before the next onslaught. But the silence had never let him. Even then, he knew that he was in a dead place, and the inevitable whisper of, "You're right where you belong," only drove him closer to the edge. Those had been some of the worst days of his life, when even after the pain had faded and he'd gathered his wits, the silence had stayed with him. And it was the same sort of silence that Visiria now held within itself.
"Something's crept up on me," he thought. "There's something out there. Something like me. Or maybe something worse. How long has it been since I fought a supernatural? 50 years. 60.
He glanced past the open door and across the cabin at the hulking machine which dominated the far wall. A gift from Fulric, the current Baron Frankenstein. It had been several trips to bring it up. In the summer of 1973, and it had been an exercise in frustration, even with his prodigious strength. Still, it was far more reliable than a stray bolt of lightning, and it softened his view of the new Baron, if only mildly. His fingers strayed inside of his shirt to touch the metal port in his chest. It felt ice cold, and heavy inside of him.
"It's been too long since I recharged."
Turning quickly, he shambled back into the house, slamming the door shut behind him. The copper tube slid into the port with ease, and the prongs on either side of its base fitted into place snugly, without resistance. But though Wulfric had designed the device well, the pain still took his breath away. Reaching out sluggishly, Boris flicked a switch, then sat back in the worn recliner that he'd placed nearby and tried to lay as still as he could, while keeping himself distracted from the electrical currents stinging his bones and insides. The thrum of the thing shuddering to life had barely died down when he heard the voice from outside. Another few seconds, and the growing sounds would have drowned it out completely.
"Boris!"
They had run the grand gamut of students of the darker, more occult side of academia. Soldiers, whom he'd aided and who had managed to look past his appearance and see him as an ally. Adventurers, who'd encountered him in some sort of distant locale. Very rarely, fellow supernaturals, who had sought him out for one reason or another. Maria was none of these. She was morbid and interested in horror, but not in any way that seemed likely to bring her or others to harm. She wasn't an adventurer or a soldier or a scientist. She was just a young woman who felt out of place, who had a strong sense of empathy. The way that she looked at him when they'd first met all those years ago still made him smile. She'd been brash and curious at the same time and utterly fearless in how she approached him. The fact that she wasn't blind was even more impressive. Boris adored her and looked forward to her visits. So when he heard the tone in her voice when she called out to him, he almost didn't want to turn to greet her. She sounded terrified, exhausted, and mournful. He turned away and did so in time to see her stumble into the patch of light that shone out from his open door and collapse. Without a moment's thought, he ran to her, picked her up, and carried her inside. She wasn't dressed for the storm, as her bare feet and face could attest. Her eyes were red and puffy. Maria's teeth chattered as Boris sat her on his battered armchair and draped her with the thickest blanket he could find. As he did, the shivers that racked her body began to subside. She stirred, moaning slightly.
"Stay there,"
said Boris, as he dragged another chair up to her and sat down across from her. "Boris," she murmured, opening her eyes and looking at him with a pained expression. "I need your help. Something bad. In the snow. Or is the snow. It's taken them. I need you to fight it. Kill it. Kill." Seeing the manic light that had come to her eyes, Boris leaned forward, clasped her shoulders, and looked into her eyes.
"Calm down,"
he grunted.
"Gather your wits. Then talk."
Maria nodded, closed her dark-rimmed eyes, took a deep, shuddering breath, and then began. "Something is in my town. The storm's cut us off. The roads are completely snowed under, and the phone lines are frozen solid. I heard that a few people went out to get help, but I've been a little bit..." She let out a hopeless chuckle and looked down at her sodden shoes, running a hand through her greasy hair as she took another deep breath, distracted to pay much attention. "They're probably all dead by now anyway. The nights are getting longer. I'm sure that the thing is way faster than any snowmobile or whatever, but they're all in a snowbank somewhere, torn apart. It's strong from what I've seen and..."
"What is it?"
asked Boris, interrupting her. Maria looked up at him. Her hand went to a cross which had fallen out of her shirt. It was a moment before she could answer him, but when she did, it was with absolute certainty.
"A vampire."
Boris was taken aback, to say the least.
"Are you sure?"
he asked slowly.
"Of course I am," she snarled, curling her fingers around the armrest. "I found the first body."
She told him, in quick, agitated spurts, about her discovery of Miss Kerr's body and the state that it had been in before continuing from there.
"She was only the first. 2 days ago I found her. That thing took two women walking together. They had concealed carrier's permits, but it didn't do them any good. Someone heard the shots, ran, found a shoe. Casings, one of their guns. No tracks, no blood, nothing. Town went into full lockdown. This thing wasn't stopped. Broke into a house last week, killed the mother and her daughter, took the husband and their 3-month-old baby. The police went on a manhunt, but a bunch of them didn't come back. The storm grew worse, and everyone got more and more afraid, and then... And then it took Sophie.
Boris hissed through his teeth at the name. He'd never met the recent addition to Maria's family, but she had told him much about her during her visits. The idea of the child lying dead and broken in the cold darkness made him sick and brought old regrets roaring to the surface.
"It happened last night," continued Maria. "I was watching her while Mom and Dad were downstairs listening to the radio for any news. I was doing my best to keep her entertained, but it was pretty obvious that something was bothering her. She'd keep rubbing her head and looking at the window like there was something there. I picked up on that pretty quickly. I checked outside to see if there was anything there, but all I could see was snow. When it was time for her to go to bed, she complained that her ears were hurting really badly. I went down to tell Mom, but then I got back. When I got back, she was gone. She was gone, and the window was open. There's been so much snow, the phone lines are down, the roads are filled. Mom and Dad went out to the police station, and they radioed me and told me that a tree had fallen near the doors, and they were trapped. I need your help to kill this thing."
"Do you even know where it's hiding?"
asked Boris, looking at his friend with pained eyes.
"Yes. It's hiding in the Golden Bow Inn."
"Are you sure?"
Again she nodded.
"Yes. When I heard that my parents were trapped, I went out looking for Sophie myself. I wandered in circles for hours until I heard her. She was calling me, Boris, from the dark near the outskirts. I ran to it. I was stupid, but the cold and the worry, it all got to me. I ran until I saw the front of the inn. The doors were gone, and I heard her voice coming from inside. I got maybe 10 feet from the door before I realized that I couldn't remember walking all the distance, and that my ears were hurting. Boris, it was mimicking her voice. It was only because of this."
Here she pulled the cross around her neck and held it up to him,
"that I escaped. I felt like something. It felt like fingers pushing into my brain."
The last of her words hung in the warm air and chilled it. Boris sat there, silent as a statue. When a silent minute had elapsed, he stood suddenly and went to the pallet of firewood near his back door, took the largest log that he could see in the pile, and began to tear it apart with bare hands.
"There is twine and glue in the cupboard, near my stove, and a knife beneath my pillow,"
he said.
"Could you get them for me?"
Maria realized what he was doing, stood, her fingers twitching with newly kindled energy. 10 minutes later, they re-entered the storm and headed for the town with makeshift crosses in their hands and stakes beneath their coats. The air had stilled by the time they arrived, and the snow drifted slowly to the earth rather than being hurled by force of the gale, but the darkness still seethed quietly around them. And now, as they entered the hotel, both felt unseen eyes tracking their movements. As he remembered it, the Golden Bow had never been a grand, pretty, or even cozy place, even when it was in business. It had been a brooding mass of concrete and beige-painted wood, with flimsy windows and an overgrown lawn crowded with litter. Its services had been announced by a dingy neon sign that always seemed to attract the fattest, most persistent moths. It looked infinitely worse now. The lawn had overtaken everything, pushing the walkway apart and throwing out vines against the grimy walls like the tentacles of a kraken claiming his ship. The windows were broken, and the sign had long since fallen over and now lay half buried beneath the snow. Boris and Maria looked around and saw the door was missing, and a deep darkness waited within. Neither of them spoke. Both could feel the presence waiting for them inside.
"We should use a back door," said Maria. "This feels too much like it's playing with us."
Boris grunted an affirmation.
"We go around, then."
The side door, which Boris had broken down, led them into a kitchen. Inside, they found what they'd expected. A place that had once been livable, now reclaimed by nature. A series of rusted stoves were capped by mounds of black-green mold. The only table in the room was covered in dingy rigs, flimsy glass bottles, and mangled plastic cutlery. The low ceiling bulged at the center of the room like a pregnant belly, forcing Boris to stoop slightly as they made their way into a hallway. Boris moved slowly, one arm raised stiffly holding the flashlight, the other hung loosely, the hand gripping a stake. Maria winced as she walked. Each step they took squelched through a paste of old magazines, wrappers, and rat droppings, as well as stirring up scores of roaches. The stink of mildew and wet earth choked the air. The beams of their lights caught and reflected the curious stares of the rats in the walls and the faint groans that the floor made sounded far too human for her liking. The thought of her baby sister being kept in a place like this made her want to scream.
"If Boris can't kill this thing, what'll happen to Sophia? Will it kill her and then move on? Or will it turn her into a vampire too?"
She shook her head desperately to clear the horrific images that her mind conjured. The suddenness and force in which they appeared almost caused her to crash into Boris, who had stopped abruptly in the middle of the hall. Maria stepped around him and sent her flashlight beam to be swallowed by a massive, jagged blotch of darkness on the floor close to them. It was a hole. Something had torn up the rotten planks from one side of the floor to the other, leaving the hallway impassable. It was wide, and the splinters of wood that rimmed the edges made it look like the mouth of a lamprey.
"You smell that?"
asked Boris. Maria sniffed the air and winced. "Ammonia."
"More than that,"
growled Boris.
"Smells like damp things. Old things. Wet fur, maybe."
"All right. That must be where it sleeps," said Maria, turning and going back to the kitchen.
"Where are you going?"
asked Boris, more genuinely concerned than anything.
"To see if there's anything extra we can use," she called back. "If we go down there, I want to be prepared. Knives, tape, rulers, equal spears or maces. If they have gasoline, we can set a fire. Try and smoke it out, or..."
She stopped abruptly, and Boris felt a change in the air.
"Do you hear that?"
Maria's voice sounded shaky, as if all the energy that she had built up before had suddenly drained away. Boris stilled, cocked his head, and listened. All that came to him was the whine of the wind, outside, the creak of timber, and the rustle of rodent bodies across the trash. He shook his head.
"No, nothing. What do you hear?"
His only response was a loud crash. Heart suddenly pounding in its metal chest, Boris staggered into the kitchen to find Maria, crouched over an upended shelf, rooting through the many dirty knives that it had held.
"I can hear her again, Boris," she muttered, picking up a meat cleaver and fitting it into her belt. "It's taunting me. It knows I know. It knows we're here. It's using her voice to mock me. It's saying..."
She stopped mid-sentence and grabbed the sides of her head, growling in pain or anger, he couldn't tell which.
We need to find it now," she gritted out,
rising to her feet and turning back to the hallway.
"It's down there. It has to be. I'm sick of this. I'm gonna gut this thing like a trout and throw it out into the sunlight."
She stood and started forward, mad determination and anger shining in her eyes. Boris reached for her, but she ducked under his arms and passed him. He turned, hoping to stop her from going down into the hole, but he didn't need to. She had halted and was staring ahead, wide-eyed and silent. Someone was standing in the hallway. A young girl, dressed in grimy pajamas with pale skin, wide eyes, and red fingers. A long gash marred her forehead on the left side. The blood had crusted over, and her bangs on that side had been matted into the mess. She hadn't moved a muscle.
Sophie?
Breathed Maria, looking for all the world like a war veteran who had returned home to find everything irreversibly changed. Sophie nodded and swallowed thickly. Her lips were gray and chapped.
Sis?
Her voice was weak and trembling.
I'm gonna get you out of here,
she said, her voice tearful. She moved forward a step, but Boris reached out and held her back. She turned on him angrily. But then she saw what he'd seen a moment before her. There was movement from the shadows behind her little sister. Maria hadn't seen them, and Boris had only barely noticed them. There were at least a dozen other people standing behind Sophia, motionless in the deeper darkness until this very instant. Not a one of them had even breathed. Even now, as they all began shuffling toward them, the only sounds they produced were the scrape of their feet against the floor. Like Sophia, they were pale and dirty. Unlike her, they were gaunt to the point of being skeletal. Their clothes were in tatters. Their fingers were black and tipped with nails like grimy talons. Their eyes were wide, unblinking, and the color of eggshells. And each of them was armed.
I recognize some of these people,
whispered Maria, pulling her cleaver free and grasping it hard enough for her knuckles to go white.
One of them is my dad's hunting partners. I could see those two women. Their photos were in the paper.
She trailed off as they shambled closer, then she said simply,
They're all dead.
Yes,
growled Boris, tensing his preparation to fight.
They stink like carrion.
What are they? Asked Maria. Are they zombies? Some kind of other vampire? A thrall?
I don't know.
Is my sister one of them? They're not touching her.
Maria sounded near emotional collapse as she watched the silent things move past her sister, who cringed and whimpered as their shadows fell across her.
I don't know,
repeated Boris.
I think it's playing with us. We need to find it.
Do we fight these things?
Asked Maria, looking down at her cleaver and stake with distant eagerness and present worry. Boris shook his head and began to move backwards.
No, we need to find it.
He turned, took a step, and stopped when he saw that the door that they'd entered through was now blocked. Blocked by a massive sheet of blue ice, which even as he looked, was growing thicker and spreading outward like a lava flow. He hissed. Seeing such a blatant display of supernatural power set his hair on end. When he saw what he saw, Maria cursed. A faint displacement of air from behind them was all the warning that both got that the undead things began to run. Maria turned just in time to duck under the way of a knife blade, which instead buried itself in the wall where her head had been. The undead thing started to pull the knife free, but anger and terror had emboldened Maria, and she made the next move, swinging her cleaver and embedding it in the attacker's neck. The thing didn't scream. It didn't struggle. It barely even bled. Its body spasmed. Then it jerked the knife free, turning on her and slashing again, this time making contact. Maria gasped as the tip of the knife opened her cheek. By this point, several other undead had joined their comrade. Maria reeled back, barely avoiding a jab from a rusted poker in the process, and drew her knife as she backed up. Boris knew that they couldn't stay where they were. The undead things were too many in number and too dangerous to take on in such a tight space, and the ice was creeping ever closer, sprouting thorns of ice as it did. He cursed himself for not being prepared and for endangering his friend.
No other door. What do I do?
Thought Boris, desperately searching his mind in the hallway for a means of escape. A scratching sound drew his attention to the wall where several rats, clearly disturbed by the sudden chaos, were moving behind it. He could see their greasy little bodies through the holes in the plaster. Realizing what he had to do the instant he saw it, Boris raised his arms and brought his clenched fist down on the wall. The rats fled as the damp plaster and molding wood began to fall away in slabs. Near him, Maria screamed as a botched attempt to evade one of her attackers earned her a vicious gash from a blank-faced woman who had come at her from her periphery, already swinging the fire axe that she carried. Maria staggered back and thrust her knife into the eye of the woman, who twisted her head away and broke the old blade off in her wound. Two of her fellow undead ambled past her as she pried at her dripping eye. The last of the debris fell, exposing a thick beam and leaving an exit big enough for him to slip through.
Maria!
He called.
Door!
She turned and ran to him, trailing blood from her cheek and stomach as she did. She passed through and he followed after, ducking in and making sure that she had made it before grabbing onto the exposed beam and tugging it out of place. It crashed down, lodging itself between both sides of the hole amidst another rain of debris, blocking the way. both backed away from the hole and stood still as they listened for any movement outside. Both expected a dozen thin arms to shoot through the gaps between beams and wall at any second. They waited. 3 seconds became 10 seconds, became 20, became a minute. Another minute passed, and still, the undead on the other side had yet to make their move. Boris shivered and looked over at his friend. Maria was panting, one hand clutching her stomach wound, the other gripping her cross. Her eyes were dark as storm clouds. She didn't seem to notice the deep, trickling divot that split the left side of her face.
She must still be worried for her sister,
he thought, pressing a hand to his port and prodding the cold metal absent-mindedly.
I wonder if she even feels that cut right now.
Another shiver brought him out of his head and made him notice the cold. It felt strange, damp and heavy like fog. It settled over him like a mantle, making his joints ache and his metal augmentations feel like ice in his already room-temperature flesh. He turned to look, really look, at the room that he'd come into. And as if someone flipped a switch, a light came on, pale and ghostly. It was hard to tell what purpose the room had. Everything was covered by a thick layer of snow, which had fallen in through a massive hole, which took up most of the ceiling. Through the hole, the waning moon shone brightly, white and ghostly on the snow. Something in the back of Boris's mind stirred as he looked at that cold light, not a memory, a thought. Oh no, not quite. He took a step forward, leaving Maria behind as he strode towards the center of the room. The sound of his boots turned Maria's head. She had been staring at the blockade, not quite paying attention, despite her best efforts. Her wounds ached dully, and the cold bit at her. Her fear for her sister and her current predicament made everything else seem far away. When her eyes landed on Boris, on the room that they were in, 3 things immediately jumped out at her, sending a fresh wave of horror through the haze, sobering her up. 1 step, 3 steps, 5. He was near the center now, near the crude skylight, and a strange feeling in his mind had grown. The world around him seemed to move slower. The light looked brighter, and the shadows darker. Static pricked at his eyes, moving like swarms of gnats. Could gnats survive in such a climate? Maria stared at the foam pool noodle, which poked out from a tear in the tarp that had covered it. Boris felt a sharp pain through his head. He groaned and pressed his hands to his temples. Maria looked over to him, then down to the discarded, hastily made cross that lay in the snow, having fallen out of Boris's coat. Boris staggered upright and took 1 more step. His foot sank suddenly, and he fell. Arms pinwheeling, hands grabbing at nothing, frost and small yellowed slivers of something rushed up to meet him, and then a voice spoke. Cold and hollow, not from outside, but from inside his head.
There you are, it said.
Maria shouted, but her words were lost in chaos, as the ground around Boris exploded outwards, and a massive dark shape shot out from beneath. Black wings snapped outward with a loud crack. A long whip-like tail shot out and caught Boris around the midsection and lifted him into the air. The vampire was in flight before Maria could blink. Boris's world spun. Slivers of ice dug into his skin and choked air from itself down his throat as the ground began to recede. A series of sharp pains forced a soundless scream from his lungs as something bit into his stomach, but he thrashed and felt his skin tear. The tail tightened around him like a python in response, and Boris felt one of his ribs shift. During the process of his creation, Frankenstein had coated his bones in steel to reinforce and strengthen them, and to aid in the conduction of lightning. He'd only ever broken a bone once in his life, and that had been when he'd been thrown from a temple in Japan, which resided on the precipice of a mountain. A glance behind him showed him that the ground was falling away quickly. He needed to extricate himself from the thing holding him fast. He brought his arms up and grabbed the tail. It was cold and vaguely moist, like a living ice sculpture. His questing fingers found what felt like a fleshy sucker, which throbbed and grew hot beneath his touch.
The pain seemed to be at its worst here. The sharp pains grew more intense as the long nails found the lip of the sucker. Knowing that he had seconds, if that, he yanked until something crunched. And above him, something snarled and the rapid ascent stopped suddenly. The tail uncoiled and lashed downwards. The sucker disengaged at the last second and Boris was flung into the roof, which partially collapsed beneath his weight. The rib that had shifted snapped on the impact and he hollered as white-hot agony blazed up his side. Something landed near him, knocking up plumes of snow as it settled. He heard it move and turned to meet it in instinct, sending a fresh wave of pain through his rib, broken inside its bent metal sheath, grating against his insides. Despite this, he rose to unsteady feet and confronted the thing. He'd never seen a vampire in the flesh. All his notions of them had come from movies and books and the occasional comic book. He'd expected a tall, ivory-white man with a flowing black cape, a tuxedo, and a piercing red gaze, or a gauntly rat-faced monster with glowing eyes, or something along those lines. Instead, what he saw made him take a step back. Its body was that of a bat, complete with big, membranous wings, tipped with clawed digits, but it was far, far too big, at least a foot taller than him, even crouching as it was. The coarse fur of its back was light blue, which grew lighter still until it reached the stomach, which was gray-white. A long, hairless tail slithered out from behind it, raising up at the same time its owners turned to him to display a flower-like mass, which opened to reveal a row of white fangs. These things wouldn't be enough to make Boris react as he did, but the face of the thing was more than enough. A human head sat atop the bat's body. Its face looked dead, but not dead like him. He looked like what one might expect from a patchwork corpse, if not slightly better. The thing staring back at him looked like something pulled from the depths of an ice-covered lake, or unearthed after a month-long burial. Its skin was mottled like its fur, and so stretched and bloated that almost all of the most basic of human aspects had been lost. Boris couldn't even tell the thing's gender. It was like something malignant had grown beneath a human face and pushed the entire thing up. Its eyes glared out at him from sunken sockets, burning blue in the gloom. Its nose had been eroded by the frost. Its lips were fat and distressed, wet, when it parted them to see rows of serrated teeth like those of a piranha. It all recalled the medieval paintings and bas-reliefs of the fabled manticore. "You're a healthy one," it said without moving its lips. "I've never met one like you before. Never tasted one like you, either." It raised its tail towards him. "Your blood, though. My, what succulent. It's like drinking ambrosia." Boris growled.
"You won't be getting any more."
It laughed, even as its fat lips pulled back in a snarl. "I'll pull your head off and wring every drop of fluid from your body." The vampire charged, and Boris met it with a roar. It drove down and snapped at him. He dodged and slammed his fist into its face. The doughy skin squelched as he ground his knuckles into its cheekbone. He brought his other fist into its nose, which burst like a blister, splattering his fingers with a cold, blotted black substance which he took for its blood. The vampire reared back with a snorting hiss and raised its wings. Boris prepared himself to block them, raising his arms and exposing his torso, an action he immediately regretted when the damn tail coiled right with the spot where his ribs were broken. The blow drew another scream from him and sent him flying halfway across the roof. He landed awkwardly, the pain almost making him pass out. The shadow fell across him, and a long talon finger wrapped around his neck. It lifted him right off of his feet and brought him down again. Boards cracked, beams groaned, and Boris bit down on his tongue until he tasted blood. Silently, it drew him up again, and again it threw him, this time aiming to send him off the edge of the roof. He barely had the presence of mind to grab onto the shingles to stop this from happening. But he still ended up with his lower half hanging from the edge. The vampire scuttled towards him, its eyes leaving contrails like meteors as it came. It was within striking distance of him when a voice called out, "You!" Boris looked at the same time as his enemy. Maria stood there, shaking and pale, her wounds still wet. She staggered forward, slipped, but caught herself. She'd have looked utterly pathetic if not for the white-knuckled fists and the dark glare that she had. The vampire regarded her coldly, cocking its head slightly as it watched her approach. Maria stopped and reached into her coat. The vampire's lips rose in a sneer as she pulled out a stake. A faint hum filled Boris's ears as it spoke to her, and her alone. The odd feeling almost kept him from climbing back onto the roof. Almost. Maria answered the vampire's telepathic question in two ways, one by saying, "Yes," the other by raising her arm and throwing the stake, which sailed through the air like a javelin. The vampire simply ducked out of the way and began charging her before the stake could hit the ground. It hadn't caught the glint of gold against the grain of the wood, but Boris had. Boris shambled to the stake and picked it up. The motion of bending over nearly made him pass out, but he clung to consciousness and drew it up. Maria's cross hung from its chain, glowing golden in the moonlight. A low, sibilant hiss made him turn. The vampire was backing away slowly, its teeth bared, as Maria held out the makeshift cross. Even as he watched the skin of its face glow red and blotchy, it seemed as though even being near the cross was affecting it. Now was his chance. He doubted something of his weight in the location he was in or in the state that he was in could be anything approaching stealthy. So that left speed. Putting his head down, he pushed off from the ground like an Olympic sprinter and ran at his quarry. The vampire saw him coming and lifted its wings to fly out of his range. It wasn't fast enough, though. Boris had closed the gap, and leaping up as far as he could, he rammed the stake through the enemy's neck. The sound that it made nearly defied description, a horrible gurgling cry that carried so much fury and shock that it made both Boris and Maria ill to hear it. They had hoped that it would fall, weakened from its wounds and the presence of the cross. Instead, it heaved itself up on its twisted hind legs and slammed its bulk down on the ground. A moment of confusion turned abruptly to panic when what could only be described as a ripple of solid ice flowed from beneath its body, and with it, hundreds of sharpened ice spears. Maria threw herself back, twisting her body, reopening her stomach wound in the process as she dodged a long icicle which shot out at her chest, growing faster and longer than physically possible. She managed the first one and didn't react in time to stop the second one, which impaled her through the thigh and traveled up into her arm. She let loose a bone-chilling howl of pain as she fell. The sight of it all brought back the worst sort of memories. A kindly old man, laying sprawled on the floor with his guts full of buckshot. As his hut burned around him, a woman with golden hair screaming and backing out into nothingness, and her blind fear, a man begging for his life as the hangman placed a noose around his neck, men and women weeping in fear as his own fingers wrapped around their necks. With a roar to rival the thunder itself, Boris charged. The Bloodsucker had created a jagged pillar of ice to aid it in its getting airborne again. It perched atop it, testing its movement, which were sluggish, like a drunkard. But they were getting more precise with every passing second. He couldn't let it escape. It needed to die, right here and right now. The icicles pierced him, punching through his flesh and shattered against his steel bones as he ran, but the pain was insignificant in that moment. His clothes ripped and the cold pushed icy fingers into his newfound wounds, and he bled freely, but he was too close to stop. The vampire's eyes widened when it saw him. It clearly hadn't expected him to sacrifice his body so casually.
"It looks afraid,"
he thought as he burst through the last of the icicles and jumped into the pillar.
"Good."
The vampire shot off from its perch with a terrible flap, leaking its own corrupt blood as it gained altitude. Its body was quickly skybound, but its long tail lingered. Boris's body might have been large, but it was not slow. It wailed as Boris's crushing grip replaced the inner workings of its tail to pulp, then went silent as he tugged downward, grounding it in the forest of ice that it had made. It started to raise, whimpering like a whipped dog as new wounds made themselves felt, but an unbelievably heavy weight crashed down onto its back, forcing it down into shards of crushed ice as sharp as razors. Boris walked across its back, eliciting muffled shrieks as he did, until he reached its shoulders. And then he knelt down, pulled the cross and chain from its place, and stuffed it down the thing's mouth. The vampire bucked beneath him, its agony translated into a telepathic whirlwind of red-hot nails and wasp stings as the cross burned a path down its throat. Boris had wondered how far it would go. He felt more than slightly disappointed when the flesh of its neck proved far too weak against the hot metal, and the cross seared its way out before it could tear into its chest.
"I hope I have enough energy for this,"
he thought, as he reached down and grasped either side of its head. Then he began to pull and twist. The combined traumas of the stake and the cross had weakened the area of its neck severely, so it wasn't long before Boris was able to rip the vampire's head off. Its blood smelled like bile and was as black as tar. It poured from the ragged stump of its neck and turned the snow into slush, save for the places where the cross rested. The blood boiled, it turned to mist where it made contact. The blood slumped to the ground and Boris clambered off of it, carrying the head in one hand as he made for Maria, who was slumped against the snowdrift. His friend was pale. The snow around her was red. But she was still alive. She smiled through colorless gums at him and accepted his hand without comment. He had to hold on to her when she jumped back down the hole, and after that, he found her a sturdy length of wood at her own insistence. They found Sophie, silent and trembling amidst a tangle of dead thralls. He helped her up after some reassurance that he wasn't going to eat her. And they set off. Later at the hospital, Maria told the authorities what had happened, as she was tended to. They had trouble believing her, but the presence of Boris in the waiting room had made them slightly more open-minded. Boris kept the head wrapped in his coat, and he only took it out to expose it to the sun, now unhindered by the storm. The flesh petrified and dribbled off the skull within seconds. Then he crushed the skull into powder, which he threw into the wind. After that, he went home. He waved away a doctor back at the hospital who'd insisted, very bravely on his part, to patch him up. But Boris knew his own flesh better than anyone, and he had the skills to repair himself. He spent most of Christmas Day recharging, deep in a fugue state as the electricity rejuvenated him. But when he woke up that evening, he found a letter on his bed, a collaborative thank you note written by Maria and her family, as well as an invitation to join them for dinner. He was glad that no one was around to see him weep when he read it. Night had fallen by the time he set out to make good on their offer, but it was a peaceful night. A night where the silence was calm and relieved. The storm had let up and only a few fat snowflakes danced across the cool air. Boris clutched the golden cross tightly as he went up to the Vasilev's door and felt some of the tension fall from his shoulders when Maria opened it to him. Peace was rare for a monster like him, but not absent.